Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. I'm your host, John Connors. I'm also the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts here in Norwood, Massachusetts. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, and mixed martial arts. Come on down, we'll make your life better. Just not right now. It's April 24th, and we're still in the lockdown from the COVID-19. And I'm here with my co-host, Dan Robin. How you doing, Dan?
Yeah, fair. How you doing?
Thank you for asking. You almost never ask.
I think in a year and a half about of these podcasts, I've asked about, that's maybe the third
time. Third time, yeah, I think it is. I think I'm losing a little bit of my mojo. Whatever mojo I had.
Your mind.
My mind, too. More of my mojo. I don't know.
Because you're in a bad lockdown, right? You're like a lot of like by yourself. And
I'm by myself. I'm essentially by myself, yeah.
And you're in a rental property, right? Which means you can't just do like home repair. And like I can keep myself busy by like
Dan,
painting.
You're putting on airs again.
Well, I'm just saying. That's not putting on air. I'm saying ways like I can do like, let me put that fence up.
Oh, right.
And let me paint. No, and then let me like replace this and that. Like
right.
I think a lot of people, anytime I've been to Home Depot, there's a line like down the block to get in. So I think a lot of people fill the time by doing those kind of chores.
Yeah.
You don't have too many of those options either, really, right? If you're
no, we've done some chores at the academy.
You're right.
We really put a serious cleaning on it. It's never looked so good. Coach Steve Cherney, God bless him, has totally did over one of the bathrooms. He's going to do the other one, I guess. It looks fantastic. Who also helped? We had Mark Gordon, Norwood Plumbing. Father of Mike Gordon, who trains with us, he did the plumbing. We got a brand new sign on the front of the building. That was one of our students, great guy, Ravi Che. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce his last name. He's New England Sign Company, I think. He is an excellent artist.
I've seen
it. Sign guy, yeah. He just does great stuff. If anybody needs any signs or artwork, reach out to that guy. He's just impressive. So we've been doing a little of that. But
right.
Yeah, but I'm by myself.
You can't
a little
do it
bit.
For, you don't have 2 months worth of stuff to do.
No, man. And then at home, you know, I kind of went down. I got some ice cream from Jay Kovitz of Ron's Ice Cream. Awesome ice cream. He's in Hyde Park in Dedham, another one of our students. And it was great. So I kind of went that route.
Wait, ice cream places are open?
I think they're doing social distancing, but they're open.
Okay.
Yeah. Like he met some of us in the parking lot. The academy and had like sundaes.
Right.
I didn't get a sundae. I just got a quart of Dutch chocolate. It was pretty amazing, Dan.
Nice.
I don't even eat ice cream. So what I did is I would eat the ice cream and I would put nuts in it because I have nuts in my house. That's a healthy food. So I have cashews. I have raw walnuts, raw Brazil nuts, which are all very healthy to eat. But it turns out if you pile them into a quart of Dutch chocolate ice cream and eat the whole thing, it's about 10,000 calories.
You just one shot.
It was really good, though.
It's hard to stop eating ice cream, though, when you get, because you always, for me, there's always like, you pass that halfway mark and then you're like, you know what? I'm almost done with this thing, right? You look down and you're like,
you don't want to be a quitter.
What am I
right?
What am I going to leave that much left? Let me just finish it off. But also, you bring up a point about all these places adjusting to the social distancing. And so I went to get Chinese food, I guess it was last Friday, and it was just mayhem. Like they didn't, like there was like a little entryway that they were supposed to leave your order on the table and walk away, you know, and then, so like then you could walk in and pick it up.
It's like a drug deal or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what would happen is they leave it and like it, basically people would pile into that little entryway. So it was like the worst social distancing
because
they put an order out and someone would be in there and someone would walk in like, how do you pick it up? And then there'd be two of you in there. Then a third person would be like, hey, that's my order and come in. And like everyone's piling up in this little area. And like, and then the woman's trying to explain, but she's like behind plastic sheeting, like yelling, like, wait out in your car. And we're like, what? Wait out in your car. And like, then while we're doing that, another person comes in like, did she say come? What? Did she wave me in? Like, no, she's yelling, come wait out in your car. Like, so everyone's just sort of winging it, right? Like, there's sort of like each individual place, I think, is just coming up with their own. methodology of how to do it.
I think they're doing a pretty good job, more or less, though, right?
Mostly, yeah. And that, even that place was doing fine. It's just we were everyone picking it up was an idiot, you know, so we were all...
Oh, right.
Including, you know, walking in when you're not supposed to, and then...
Dan, do you think people are more well-behaved than you thought, or more getting irritated and stressed and tense?
I would say well-behaved.
I think so, right?
Yeah. I mean, you hear stories, but I think they're pretty few and far between.
Right.
When I run into people, they seem to be in pretty good moods, you know?
Mm.
Like even just walking or walking my dog or going for a run, or I guess that's the only times I'm out, or getting Chinese food. But like everyone's just sort of friendly.
Yeah.
What I found is it's easy to forget, like immediately forget about the quarantine, at least for me. Like someone came to pick up my tractor, like my riding mower for service. And I walked out and I'm like, oh, do you need a hand with that? Like pushing it up onto the truck. It's like, yeah. And I completely forgot to stay away from the guy. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just like, I think when, as soon as we get the all clear, we're going to go right back. Like, because I think you just forget. You just go back to how you've always been.
Dan, I definitely am. As soon as we get the all clear, I'm going to a restaurant and sit at the bar if I can and have a drink and meal or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll all quickly go back to how we were.
I miss it. We were talking about that off the air last week, that you get an energy from that kind of...
Just being in a social setting.
Yeah. It's energizing. I didn't realize it was so energizing because now I don't have it at all.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm losing energy and I'm getting bored with everything. I've watched Tiger King. I don't want to watch anything else. I'm done. I mean... Yeah. I try to put something on the TV. There's nothing that's interesting to me. I've watched some old UFC fights, but that's about it. I don't know.
That's the worst feeling, right? I don't know if other people have this in quarantine where you're like, that's when boredom really overtakes you, and you're like, I don't want to watch TV.
Yeah.
I don't want to read. I don't want to go online. I don't want to work out. And you're just sort of sitting there like, I don't want to do anything.
Yeah. It sounds like a real entitled person's problem, I guess, but it's I feel it.
Yeah.
So I try to I was like, I got to find something interesting to watch. And I love the Coen brothers and their movies. You know, they're probably the most popular one now is the Big Lebowski, but they've made a lot of movies. They've made a lot of movies over the decades. So there was one that I thought, you know, I'd never seen this and it's got a pretty good rating. Maybe I'll watch it. So I turn it on. It's called Barton Fink. Have you heard of the movie?
I hadn't seen it.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
I thought I hadn't seen it, but apparently I had, because when I watched it,
virtually
remembered every scene.
It's Sean Goodman and...
John Turturro, yeah.
Turturro, yeah.
It wasn't good. I didn't like it at all. It was kind of depressing and
ponderous. It's a dark one.
And ponderous. It moves slowly. It's weird, right?
I like pretty much all the Coen movies, though.
Yeah.
So I still would probably say I liked it, but it's not probably not a top five for me.
I love their movies, yeah. Oh, No Country for Old Men. They did that one too, right?
Yeah. I love the movie Miller's Crossing, which most people haven't heard of.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's one of my all-time favorites. Guys, if you have not seen that movie...
And you're sitting at home anyway.
You got to watch Miller's Crossing. But we don't want to hype it because then they'll
expect that always works,
Let's just say it's okay. Worth watching, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's once you say it's good,
it throws people off, right?
I did that, or in the reverse, where I was on this podcast saying I really didn't like the movie Get Out.
Okay.
So then,
would people reach out to you?
I was like, I can't believe that everyone says it's like a best picture, best movie of the year. I thought it was garbage. So then, no, it was my daughter and her boyfriend, and they're like, I told them how much I hated it. So I'm like, well, now you're going to like it. Like, I guarantee it. And I could tell I was in the next room and heard them watching it and heard them going, oh my God, oh really? You know, and I was okay, I can already tell.
You psyched
them
into it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's hugely powerful for movies. If you hear it's going to be awful, you sway much more towards liking it and vice versa, I think.
Yeah, probably, right?
So now we've ruined Miller's Crossing for a bunch of people, but I still think it's...
Just watch it. Yeah, you still like it. Yeah. It's got a lot, that whole crew, right? John Turturro, Stephen Buscemi, he's a great actor too, right?
Yeah.
He's an interesting guy. I didn't realize he's in a ton of their movies, yeah.
Yeah, they use a lot of the same guys.
Yeah. It's a good movie. But yeah, that's where I'm at. But I found that I'm actually drinking a little bit less and eating a little bit more healthy through no willpower, just like out of boredom. I just got bored out of eating bad food
so
and drinking.
Another diet tip, like lose the will to lose all your will.
Lose your enjoyment of the good things in life, right. And then you'll just stop doing them.
That's yeah, tip right there.
It makes just life.
Like, I don't see even the point of going and getting something good to eat.
Yeah, and exactly.
Like, I just don't even care.
Don't even care. Chocolate, ice cream, no.
That's not care. A bad diet tip.
Yeah. It's no fun though.
Yeah, no. I think me, like a lot of people out there, I've just been a pig, like eating too much, drinking too much, just lazing around too much. Mm. I went running. I'm trying to beat it. So I went running, and I think I told you, it felt like I had never run in my life. Like, that's how I felt running. I was like, I feel so, could I really even be this out of shape? You know what I mean? I was just like, I can't even, I know I've been sedentary, but I can't be this out, how could I possibly be this out of shape? So I don't know. I started worrying about my health. I think I told you, I was like, am I sick? Because how could I be this terrible shape? It hurt like, I don't know, barely, halfway down the block, and I was like in agony.
I think part of that is just your body's not used to starting itself up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you're starting an engine that's been lying cold all winter in your garage, you know?
Yeah, and I think we've talked about before that this component of you get unused to the pain. You know, you get like,
oh, right.
So it starts hurting, and you're like mentally sort of like much weaker, I think, at least for me, like I start, you know, I'll be like, oh, I'm in a lot of pain. And then I'll be like, well, I'm not even sweating yet. And I know other times when I'm in shape, I'll be like pouring, drenched with sweat and gritting my teeth and fighting through it and yelling curses at myself. And I think I'm just softer too, physically, that's mentally, nice, everything. So I'm trying to fight against it. I'm trying to work out a bit and eat a little better, drink a little
aren't
less.
Aren't you always either getting stronger or softer? You know what I mean? You're either getting harder or softer.
Yeah, there's no gotta be doing one or the other.
There's no stasis. All right, Dan, let's get to it. I mean,
what everyone's waiting for.
Here's the
thing. Jiu-jitsu tips.
We always give great value. I mean, your personality, your humor, just your banter, that's value enough for any podcast. That would make any podcast a best-selling podcast.
I'm not sure I agree, but
but we're not going to rely just on that. We're also
people are here for the
give a little bit jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
Well, also some people are not here for the jiu-jitsu though.
Right. So they want to hear all the nonsense. Yeah.
I know. That is the balancing act of this podcast, right? Because some people are completely uninterested in what other listeners are exclusively interested in.
Oh, right. Right.
So we're juggling that.
Yeah, I think.
But not even intentionally. I think we're juggling it, just doing what we feel like doing anyway.
Right. Well, last week we also talked about, so I had one of our listeners, Mike Gould, I consider him a super fan. And he reached out to me and he tried to do the 100 shoulder rolls. I think he said he got up into the 60s maybe. So he did a pretty good job for the first time, but I guess that 100 number was a little bit more challenging than I realized when I said it. But good news, I'm still the champion.
Have you done any more?
I'm waiting for somebody to break my 102 record. Once they break my record, I'm going to come back.
Are you just going to bury them? I just had this feeling like if someone comes back and says, I did 110.
I'm going to do 112.
Can you just do like 112 or you just go like 200?
No, 112. It's going to be like the old Soviet system. I get a bonus for every world record. Remember that guy in the 70s, Dan? I don't know if you're too young. His name was Alexeyev. He was a super heavyweight weightlifter.
Russian guy?
Yeah.
I sort of remember like old pictures of him.
Yeah, he looked like the most round, like obese, disgusting guy. And he was like the world's greatest weightlifter. And essentially every time he competed, he would break a world record by, you know, half a kilo or something like this. And I guess the strategy was he would get some kind of bonus every time he broke the record.
He'd always break it by the little...
Just a little increment, yeah.
Most of these weightlifters do look like they have, like, usually, like, almost like have a... Even to this day, the strong men have like bellies.
This guy had a real big round belly.
Yeah, he was more so back in the
70s. But I think it probably creates some support and synergy between his stomach and his thighs and everything when he's in the bottom
position.
Just
all the weight, having that additional weight. It's like offensive linemen in football right now. Yeah. They're all over, like, it's required to be overweight. Like, they retire and then they get a bunch of them, of these linemen, they retire and then you see them looking real fit.
They get lean.
Yeah.
Teddy Bruschi lost some weight after he retired, right?
Although there is that guy, who played the Mountain in the Game of Thrones. Yeah. He's one of the world's strongest men, and he's pretty ripped. Like, he doesn't have, like, a belly.
Big, tall guy. Though,
so too, he's able to do 6'8". They're all freaks now. It's not like the 70s where, like, Farmer. Did you watch the old school?
Bill Cashmere?
Yeah, and there was Farmer Cleve Dean was a guy. I think he'd compete in overalls. And it was like back in the day, and he was just like this, he was 6'8". It was like his strength routine was lifting a cow or something, you know? And it was just like
very sophisticated.
Yeah, it's just like not the most sophisticated. But the thing I liked about that I almost wish they could bring back, because now it's like its own sport, strongmen. But back then, I think they didn't even know what they were going to have to do.
Oh, right.
You know, it would just be sort of like, bend this steel bar. And they'd be like, bend, all right, I'll try, you know? Or like, wind this weight up with a 20 feet with hanging from a rope, and they could either sort of do it and like lift up this thing of concrete and bring it over here, and like run with a fridge on your back was a real one, right? And I think they would just show up and be like, well, we're all strong, let's see,
that's pretty cool,
who can do what. You know, it's almost like the early UFC where it was like, all right, let's fight, and it had its own kind of appeal, right? Now World's Strongest Man, they're like, well, he's an expert in the farmer's carry, and you know, like, and he's, you know, they're all know exactly what events are there, and they train precisely on those events, and they'll like, you know, not try hard on one because they know they can't do well on it. Right. So then they're like, I'm going to get my points on this next one.
And strategy.
It's become a sport.
Yeah.
Whereas there was something fun about just like, this guy's a bodybuilder, Franco Colombo. This guy's a big farmer. This guy's an actual strongman. This guy, Lou Ferrigno's in it, you know, like.
Franco Colombo was a remarkable guy because he was very short, right? Wasn't he like 5'5" or something? But just, you know, gigantic muscles. And, but I think he was legit strong guy, right? I vaguely remember he went on some TV show and there was some contest. And it was like some really big guy, like a 6'8", 300-pound guy, and him. So he just looks like Mutt and Jeff. And they got to try to blow up a hot water bottle by blowing into it like a balloon.
Oh, yeah.
And the other guy could blow it up a little bit. And Franco Colombo just burst the thing. He just like blew it completely up.
I don't know if I either saw that or heard the story.
Yeah.
But that's what I think about all those. Like, and then football players would be on the World's Strongest Man competition. Mm. Like, just they're like, he's the strongest guy on the Steelers, you know? And so there was something enjoyable about it being like, this is just a bunch of strong guys seeing pretty who cool. can do the strongest stuff.
Speaking of old UFC, I watched Evan Tanner against Rich Franklin. They're running some replays on ESPN, I guess. Guess what year that was? Can you take a guess?
How long? I'm sure 15 years ago.
Exactly. 2005. Yeah. Evan Tanner's striking skills were so undeveloped, I found it shocking. I didn't remember it like that.
Because we all watched it at the time.
Sure, yeah.
That's interesting. I've thought about that. If I watched fights that I've already seen, if I just see them with a different eye, it sounds like I would.
Yeah. The whole sport has evolved to such a higher level of technique and expertise in 15 years. It's hard to believe when you look at that fight. I mean, wow. I think, not to speak ill of Evan Tanner, he died out in the desert some time ago. Yeah. How long ago was that? Like 10 years ago or something
like that.
But yeah, that was really surprising to me. I didn't realize he looked so awkward and untechnical striking.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know that story, that's a crazy story. We don't need to go into it, but he literally just went camping in the desert, left his campsite without enough water and died from...
No, what he did, Dan, he had a plan, which is, I found it fascinating. He was supposedly a self-taught grappler, and he had a lot of success, good competitor. He was UFC champ at one point, middleweight champ. And you can only go so far being purely self-taught.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, if you have, you need an expert to come in and give you some guidance and help you out. And then, you know, Rich Franklin ended up stopping him like in the fourth round, but Rich Franklin just really dominated him in the striking. Although he did drop Rich Franklin somehow with one punch in the first round, but that's probably why striking wasn't there. He didn't, you can't really self-learn striking.
Right.
You really need a coach, an expert coach. So when he went camping, he just was all self-taught on camping. So he had some plan where he was going to go into the desert, camp a certain place, then he was going to hike to this certain spring, get his water, and come back.
And he missed the spring, right?
Well, the spring was like dried up.
If he had
consulted an expert, they would have said, you can't do that. That's crazy. So he ended up dying. So I don't, this sounds terrible. I don't want to blame somebody for dying, but it seemed
you
like.
You cut it that close when your life's on the line. You can't.
To me, it underscored the value of having some expert input.
Yeah.
Not trying to figure everything out for yourself. I mean, but I'm sure that was just his personality that suited him and made him an interesting guy, and a guy that tried a lot of things.
Right. And what occurred to me too is because I've told you that I go hiking a lot and not extreme adventurism, but just sort of a fair amount of off trail hiking. But I always have like layers of contingency plans to live. You know what I mean? I sort of think,
if you're climbing some mountain and you break your femur or something, you could literally die, right?
Yeah. That one, I'm not sure how I'd live. But I sort of feel like, I think, so that's worst case scenario, break my femur. I'm like, I think I tried it. Like, I could probably have like a horrendous 2 days while I crawl and limp my way back to where someone would find me or where I could get self-service or something. Where it's like, I think I could live in almost any circumstance here. And usually I go with someone and then I don't have to crawl or limp my way back. You know, they go. So I always try to think like, how can I live if something goes wrong? And usually I try not to do anything that I'm like, if this goes wrong, I'm dead. Mm. So that's what I was thinking about Evan Tanner. It was like, if that stream dries up, I'm dead. You don't want to do that, right? You want to be like, if the stream dries up, I still have enough water to get back to my campsite and that'll be it. I think he started wandering around after that, like he lost sight of the campsite or...
I think he was close to the campsite, but he was delirious and then he just went in circles for a while until he perished. Yeah. Brutal. Yeah, I don't want to do anything to risk my life anymore, Dan. I'm done with that.
I know. I'm slowing down with that stuff.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have some friends that are like, were baffled when I even just jumped the skydiving. But to me, it seemed like fake risk. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm not really at risk. Like, I sort of am, but you know, people keep jumping out of the planes and they're all
living.
Yeah,
I'm not going
to
do that one. Yeah.
You're not.
Nah.
Well, but that's a good example where I'm sitting
there
here saying.
There is some risk. You can't say there's zero risk. There's non-zero risk.
I think like a year ago that actual came up on the podcast about the skydiving. And I was like, the thing that I realized there was risk is when I got there and saw the people running the skydiving
school.
There
you go. Yeah.
And I was like, I think this is how I put it last time, which was I thought it would be like a bunch of ex-military guys being like, your life's on the line. We triple check everything. And it was actually just a bunch of hippies that were like, like, I'm jumping with no shoes on and like, oh, I'm so hungover. And I was like, even the pilot of the plane was like that.
Yeah.
Like, it was like they got their hands on a plane somehow. And I'm sure he had a license, but I was like, there's definitely risk. These guys are definitely not like, it's not like sewed up tight here.
Yeah. You're exchanging, you know, some entertainment and experience for some level of risk.
Right.
I think when I researched it, it was 1 out of 10,000, but most of that included like all kinds of specialized jumping and everything. So I think we were trying to guessing that the tandem jump is probably 1 out of 100,000.
Yeah, so it's almost no risk. But that said, I won't do it again. I did it, like check mark. I think I said this last time too, that they kept telling me, once you do it, you'll never want to stop. Like, you're just going to get addicted. You'll come in, you'll be probably back here next week, you know. And I hit the ground, is like, oh, so are you addicted? I'm like, nah. Check Like, I just, for me, it was like, check mark, done.
Yeah.
I'm done. Like,
that has to be most people, right?
I liked it, but I was also like, I don't need to keep jumping out of planes. Like, why would I do that?
Yeah. I don't know.
And I've never, I think I passed my window for the bungee jump. For years, I kept saying, I know I'm going to do one of these bungee jumps. Like, I'm just going to be vacationing and I'm going to see, like, here, you can jump off this bridge or something. And I'm going to be like, I have to try it. And my whole body's going to be going, don't do it. Why are you doing that? But I'm going to be like, I knew my personality, like that I'd be like, I have to try it. So I always said I have a date in my future with a bungee jump one way or another. But I think I might have missed the window because now I'm sort of feeling like I could see walking past and going, nah.
I'm definitely not doing it. Yeah. I don't care. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really need to.
No. I don't need that experience. All right, Dan, let's get prepared. I got all these pages of notes. I'm gonna, you know, and let's get to it. I think you're going to like this first idea, and you don't have to agree with me. I'm ready for you to violently disagree. This is something that came up. I was talking to crew Mark Delagrati about this some time ago, and I think it has a lot of value. So I'll put it this way, Dan. I'm going to compare. Well, let me start with this. You know, in martial arts, they have this idea of like chi.
Yes.
What do you think of chi?
Well, my experience with it
was
they would talk about like you can feel the chi like a chi ball. Like you could, I learned it as like you could feel it between your fingers like this.
Like electricity or something.
Yeah, you could actually feel it. And then I was saying, well, obviously, I don't believe that there's actually electricity between my hands. I think.
Right.
Like where you're exercising, so you're feeling your heartbeat and your fingertips, and it's pulsing, and so you feel like you feel something there. And, you know, they'd say, look, you can't pull your hands apart, you can't push it in like this. That's how they were teaching me chi. And then they were saying, you can send it in your arm, and then you can't bend your arm. And I would try to, this was karate, and I was sort of trying to get along with everyone and saying, well, is it so much an actual energy going through your arm, or is it like if you picture it, it helps you do things? Like it
like
helps
a metaphor.
You. Yeah, like a metaphor. Like it, if you picture energy flowing through your arm, it helps you keep it stiff. So maybe there's not energy, but still we can call it chi because. And they were like, no, it's actual energy. And if you've been around in the business as long as I have, and seen what I've seen, then you'll know it's an actual thing that courses through your body, an actual charge. So that soured me on chi, where I was like, you're not going to bend on this. You're going to insist that it's like a magical energy that can't be measured.
So I think that like a lot of things that are in that mystical realm, there's some sort of practical, real thing there, and they just take it and run with it and exaggerate it and make it crazy, and then they're throwing chi balls through a sheet and knocking somebody out on the other side of the sheet and this crazy total nonsense. But I think there's something to chi in the quality of like the way you're carrying your body, like the sort of the tone of your musculature, you know what I mean? So here's one way to think about it, Dan. Big cat energy versus dog energy. I know you're a big dog guy, and I think both of these energies kind of have value. You know what I mean?
So how would you describe big cat energy versus dog energy?
Okay. Maybe I'll start with the dog because I'm kind of a dog guy myself. I actually have a...
That doesn't mean you have to have the same energy though.
But I think I kind of do. You know, I got a canine-esque tattoo somewhere on my body. And I used to have a nickname in high school, Mad Dog. So I'm kind of a dog-like.
For those who don't know, that's why the gym... What was Mad Dog Jiu-Jitsu?
We did that a long time ago, yeah, like 15 years ago.
So
yeah.
If anyone's heard that around, doesn't know what it came from, it was actually started as a high school nickname.
That's it. And what are the qualities of a dog? A dog can be ferocious. It can be kind of frenzied. Can be determined. You know what I mean? You're dogged. Terminate. There's a lot of good qualities, right? Loyal, sort of. But a dog, you know, dog can bite onto something. He's going to bite and hold or bite and shake. I think I have some of that energy, but it's kind of like your muscles are tight, you're grabbing onto something, maybe you're ripping the flesh when you're biting, but at the end of the day, it's not necessarily lethal either, right? And dogs kind of work in packs. You know, ultimately a dog is a domesticated animal. It's alert. It can be on edge, right? It's part of a pack. It's in a pecking order as well. There's an alpha dog, so to speak, and other dogs. And, you know, it can mutilate, it can bite, it can tear, it can injure. It's a servant to man, you know? And it can heal. Where do those terms come from, Dan? You know, sick. You ever hear that when you were a kid? Sick 'em. That's what an owner says to their dog, and the dog goes and bites the person. Yeah, you've heard of that, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
What is that? Where did
it's
that
been
come
a while.
From?
I don't think Sick'em has been out there for a while.
That's an old-timey one, huh?
Well, now if you sent Sick'em and a dog bit someone, the dog would be euthanized and you go to prison.
Oh, that's terrible, yeah.
You know, because time has changed.
I wonder where they and heel.
Dogs aren't supposed to
bite anyone.
What
does heel come from? Like the dog stands behind you at your heel?
I don't know. Are these German words that got twisted over to...
I don't know. But that's kind of dog energy.
Yeah.
And I think I had that. And it's good. I mean, you're tenacious.
I know where they got sit. never, sorry.
Awesome. So, but I'm thinking I personally need a little bit more cat energy in my martial arts. So I'm thinking of like a jaguar. You know what I mean? So it's kind of relaxed. It's stealthy. You know, it's focused. Smooth. It's kind of rhythmic. You know what I mean? Powerful. Patient, but it can also pounce in a flash, right?
And this one's more lethal.
It's too. Lethal. And it's a lone hunter. You know, like a jaguar, he just gets up and says, what am I going to kill and eat today? You know, he's not in the whole pack, doesn't have to worry about. It must be so much easier for the jaguar. He's just looking for something to kill, and he's not like looking over his shoulder at something that might kill him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's almost invulnerable, right? Do they get killed by other animals? Do you have any idea?
A jaguar?
Yeah.
Lion can kill them. But
they're in different places, right? Like a jaguar.
Well, I'm thinking of like a leopard. I'm thinking of leopards get killed by lions.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Wherever they overlap, the bigger one will kill the smaller one.
But I'm thinking that kind of big cat energy could be good for a martial artist and competitor. Like you're relaxed and you're ready to pounce. And you're just focused on attacking. You know, you're focused on, and jiu-jitsu would be getting the submission, like taking them out, you know?
And we've talked a little bit about with stand-up, there's something, I wasn't thinking it quite in that way,
mm-hmm.
but the help in your own head of thinking, I'm coming after this person. So you're not backing up and you're not trying to just get away and thinking, oh, I'm going to get hit. And
yeah.
Like you're
the jaguar
moving forward.
Is unequivocally the predator. It is the predator. And, you know, there's some things that are prey for it and there's some things it doesn't have any business to do with. You know what I mean? But he's not the prey for anything else. So he's the predator. So it makes everything easier. You're just locked in. And you know what I mean? A dog's going to worry about a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
He can bite and hang on and rip and tear and get everything and get after it that way. But it's just a different vibe. You know what I mean?
And I think one of the key vibes, unless you disagree, it's not one of the key vibes, is the mindset of like going for the kill, right? Like, so you're rolling for specifically with jiu-jitsu, you're like, I'm looking to take this person out. I'm looking to get his neck, or I'm looking to get that arm, or I'm looking for, and a picture of the dog energy more is like controlling and latching on and battling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, whereas the cat energy would be looking like, I'm just waiting here and I'm going to get him.
Mm.
And I think with the stand-up, it's also, what would dog energy be sort of like taking shots? And like, I think...
Trading, maybe.
Yeah, trading. And the cat energy would be more like, just look like I'm looking to get him. I mean, if not even knock him out, because we don't spar that way, really. But it's like, I'm looking to tag him. So I'd have rarely in the past achieved that mindset where you feel like, with stand-up, like I'm looking to hit them and then... You can almost, like, if they're hitting you, which often was the case with me while I was, like, it's almost like you're shrugging it off. Like, you're like, I'm not paying attention to that. I'm looking for my shot.
Mm.
And you can get in a mindset as opposed to getting hit and being like, uh-oh, and like trying to get out of the way and ducking. It's more like I'm looking for my shot. So if I'm getting hit, you're just kind of shrugging that off as like, maybe you're trying not to get hit, but you're also thinking, I'm still just really focused on getting my shot at them. And then if you're taking shots at them, maybe you get hit less anyway, because
probably
you're taking your shots. So that's how I'm interpreting it. I don't know if that's how you.
That's how I'm thinking of it. And I'm thinking you're going to manage your energy better too, because you don't have any unnecessary muscular tightness, you know? And in grappling, sometimes if you hold on too long, it works against you. You get reversed or swept or something, you know?
Yeah.
You can't go with the flow as much. And that idea of always looking to that finish, you know? So I think we talked about Dan Gable last time in that fighter's mind. He had something else here, Dan. I wrote it down as a quote. I thought it was interesting. He said, breaking somebody is the goal. You get him to quit trying to win. He tries to survive. You know what I mean? That's interesting, right? Once they start, like you said, you start worrying about getting hit, you're trying to survive, you almost can't win then, because it's your priority is screwed up. You know, your focus is on the wrong thing.
Yeah, you'd almost have to, it'd almost be a lucky shot or something.
Right. Or in grappling, you're just, you know, you're just trying not to get tapped maybe. And that's just not a good place to be operating from. I think it saps your energy too. We had one guy, a competitor who trained with us for a long time. What's his name now? I'm blanking. But I noticed he was always a really good competitor because, Lorenzo. Pardon me, Lorenzo. Lorenzo Perez. He was a cat. He was very cat-like. He very relaxed, very focused. So some of his matches, he might not be winning, but he was always looking for the kill. You know what I mean? He was never competing just to survive, ever. And he ended up being a really effective competitor in jiu-jitsu. He was way more cat-like than dog-like, you know? And he'd be getting in a bad position, but he would just keep working and recover and then always looking for his opportunity. I'm going to try to be more cat-like, Dan, in my training. Oh, but then I had another thought with this. You know, trying to survive. I was thinking maybe the purpose of jiu-jitsu or MMA training, martial arts training, is to teach yourself to never quit trying to win. Like, always keep focusing on winning. Like, never go into that. Like, some people advocate that in jiu-jitsu. You must have heard that. As long as you can survive, that's all that matters, right? And they kind of like look to Helio Gracie would have these long matches sometimes, like 45 minutes.
It's like defending yourself and not getting hurt in the street is, I think, where it came from, right? Like,
maybe. But then even Helio Gracie, he's always looking to finish the guy, even if he was defending for 45 minutes before he finally got his opportunity to finish the person. But
also, if you can finish someone, then you're really definitely going to survive.
You're definitely going to survive. Yeah. But that's kind of, I thought that was an interesting idea because, don't you feel like a lot of people, not even in jiu-jitsu, they kind of settle for just trying to survive. They stop going.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You know what's specifically in jiu-jitsu, everyone goes up, spends years going against people that they can't beat. You know what I mean? Like when everyone starting out goes against people that are much, much better than them.
Right.
So I think it's particularly hard to keep in your mind like, I'm trying to finish this guy, because you so often have to roll like there's no way I can finish this person. But so
you have to ignore negative result after negative result 1,000 times and still not lose your confidence.
Right.
You're still not lose the expectation of success the next go.
But that's
go
what
around.
We're saying. Yeah. You should try, right? Like it'd be like, maybe I know there's no possible way I can finish you, but try. Yeah. Right. And like maybe you roll better anyway, even if you don't finish that person, if they are too good.
Right.
You have a better role against them, and you might as well try, right?
Definitely.
I think there's another thing. Maybe you could say, because you're in a perfect position to address this, related issue in jiu-jitsu, which is people feel like it's maybe disrespectful to like try to tap someone that's well ahead of them, like to suddenly throw a guillotine on you.
They might feel that way, yeah.
Do you think they shouldn't feel that way, or do you think...
They shouldn't, no. But maybe they're also afraid... of some kind of retribution, like, oh, if I tap this guy now, he's going to really lay into me, really give me a hard time. So, yeah, I don't know.
That's I thought that more in stand-up, right? When I think I mentioned when I was boxing and just accidentally catching a accomplished boxer really hard, and then I'd be like, oh, man, this is going to suck. You
know, like, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty common. Yeah. That's why boxing is that's a tough sport, man. Yeah.
I don't feel like your academy and a bunch of academies that we know, they don't have much of that retribution kind of mentality for the most part, but
I hope not. I'm always just trying to learn. So if something goes wrong for me, I don't get the result I want, I'm trying to just technically figure out, all right, what should I have done differently, you know? Right. That's when if I train, you know, with my son, whoever, something happens, I get swept. You know, I ask them, the person who got over on me, I'm like, so what should I be doing? Because they usually have a better insight into it because they somehow got to a position of advantage in order to execute something, you know?
Right. And I could see, I think maybe you or anyone else would get angry. We're not advocating like wrenching something or, you know what I mean? Like, suddenly violently trying to kimura you or you know something
violent. No, I think it's just the attitude of trying to win.
Yeah.
I think you see it in life. Like sometimes people, you know, they get out of school and they have family and kids or something and then they're like, yeah, all right, I'm done. You know? I don't know.
Keep trying to win.
And I mean outside of jiu-jitsu it's more difficult because you have to define what the hell that means. You know what I mean? I'm still trying to, I think of that all the time, Dan. You know, I was competing and I'll probably still compete, but hopefully if we get back, if they open it up again someday. But I'm also trying to redefine that. Like, so besides competing, what does winning for me mean, you know?
Right. So a lot of people out there, it involves advance in their business.
Right.
But it might not. It could be personal or social or lots of things, right? What does winning mean?
I don't know. So that's where I'm at, you know? I'm trying to figure that out. And then, so, my next jiu-jitsu idea was, I don't know if I can read this. Maybe I should have you read it. You probably have better eyes than me.
And this is from the fighter's mind.
This is from the fighter's mind. And I went to Kenny Florian's chapter, and he's got a small paragraph here, which I thought was so cool, because to me, it encapsulated a great philosophy, something that Kenny has had and still has, I'm sure. Maybe I'll read it. This is going to be too boring if I read this. My goal, this is Kenny speaking, is to beat the hell out of the last Kenny Florian I fought, he says over lunch, which is a funny way to put it because he didn't really fight himself. But I'm going to look at his game and blow him out of the water. You can't compare yourself to Fedor or BJ Penn or some of those tippy-top guys. You really want to be as good as you can possibly be. So that's interesting, right? It's about sort of incremental improvement, like becoming a better version of yourself, right? You want to be able to be the most amazing fighter that you could ever be. Someone who can do things that Fedor or George St. Pierre can't possibly comprehend. So then on the other hand, it's like completely idealistic, right? And kind of bombastic.
It sounded like two different points to me, right? Like
it is two different points at once. That's why I found that so fascinating. He's like, I just want to be better than myself and eventually the greatest of all time.
I guess if the idea, I guess to make it one point is if you keep bettering yourself, then you just go on past everybody in theory. You know what I mean? Just get better and better and better.
I think it's a little bit like the idea that we had talked about before, where you have this sort of North Star goal that's like could take decades or a lifetime to achieve, but then you're investing yourself and focusing on the process, your daily process to get there.
And again, in jiu-jitsu, it always relates to something that you've brought up in here before, which is And it's come up a number of ways of like trying not to weigh yourself against other people and trying to just be like, am I getting better? And if I feel like I'm getting better, who cares how it shows up in my roles, you know?
Yeah. You know, we have an episode coming up in June of this author that I interviewed, and there was a point that came up. We talked about jiu-jitsu, and I thought he had a really good concept. So you know how when you're rolling, you're in class training, and if somebody gets over on you, you might feel a little bit bad because, geez, I don't feel that good about myself.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. I think that's happened to me once or twice, yeah.
So he advocated, I like the way he said this, is don't focus on your current self, like, or don't identify with your current self. Identify with your future self. So in other words, yeah, I'm the world champion. I'm the Masters world champion in the future. This is like the old me today getting my ass kicked, and I'm just learning from this. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it's a positive attitude, especially for newer people than yourself who are...
Like, you need some identity. Yeah. So instead of identifying, yeah, I'm a white belt. I know nothing. I'm an idiot. I'm terrible. Instead of identifying with that, identify with your future self, you know, where you've mastered it. And now you're just going through the process.
I'm just moving
now.
Through this stage.
Thought that was interesting. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I like it. And there's all there's a theme here, right? In general, if you can, it's hard to incorporate all these things, you know, where there's a lot of information going out. But one theme that runs through a lot of it is trying to not weigh too heavily your current performance. Like your most recent role. Don't be like, I was so bad right there against that guy. It's sort of like how I'm on my way. It's like I'm building myself up from where I am now, and it doesn't really matter what just happened to me.
Yeah, it's a little paradoxical, right? I was listening to Gordon Ryan, and I get from him, you know, people talk a lot about ego. You shouldn't have a big ego, this type of thing. And I think the reality is you can have a big ego, but you don't want to have a fragile ego where something doesn't go right. You just knock over the chessboard or whatever, the checkerboard, and you leave, you know? So he seemed like he always expected to win and to win every practice, always expects a lot from himself. But he doesn't get it all the time, but it doesn't discourage him from continuing to come back and keep trying and improve, you know?
Right. That's interesting because you and a lot of people have always said that there's a certain fragile ego kind of person that you see, particularly in a jiu-jitsu gym. They come in once, they get tied up in a knot by someone who looks wimpier than them, and they leave immediately, and they never come back. And I think every school has that story, right?
Yeah.
Some tough-looking guy that just can't handle it. So then the question is, how do these other tough guys handle it? And I think it's a version of things we've been talking about, right? It's sort of like, I lost, but I'm going to get better, and I'm going to win.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a big ego. They have a confidence that they're going to become a master, and they're not that, you know. But then again, Dan, they seem to get annoyed and frustrated when they don't get the result that they want, but they can focus on the technique and focus on improvement, you know?
I think I'm reminded of, I think it was Kenny Florian who used to say that no matter how many times someone beat him, he'd think, I'm going to beat him the next time we roll.
Yeah.
And he could do it endlessly.
Yeah.
Which is hard, you know, because it's hard. You know, yeah. A lot of people get discouraged. They're like, I can't beat this guy. But he'd say he would just endlessly think, I'm going to get him the next time.
I'm going to beat him the next time
or pass his guard the next time or whatever it is.
I think that's a very powerful mindset, a really powerful frame to look at things. Yeah, definitely. So maybe we should recap our jiu-jitsu thing. So we talked about big cat energy versus dog energy. I need to be more big cat. Talked about Dan Gable trying to get somebody to quit trying to win just to try to survive. And we're talking about how we don't want to do that. We want to use our training to train us to keep trying to win.
Interesting. And again, off the mat too.
Yeah. Then we talked about focusing on your future self instead of your current self. Talked about chi. Talked about Kenny Florian with that kind of incremental progress, but eventually becoming great. And also Gordon Ryan and Kenny having that strong ego, unfragile ego, where they're going to beat them. They're sure they're going to win next time, no matter how bad they get smoked this time. Right? That's pretty cool. Well, that's all I got, Dan. That's all the value I can add. I think
we're good. We're good.
Another great podcast.
Maybe. I think is the next Friday. No, we're not there yet. Soon we're going to hit that May 4th where, in theory, there's a chance of Massachusetts opening up again.
Yeah, they haven't said anything yet, right?
I feel like no one's really too optimistic about that. But
when I look at the numbers and the graphs, it seems like there's a cresting of the surge. But yeah. I guess they need a little bit more information. We'll see. I'm dying to get back. As soon as they give us the green light, we're opening up for sure. So that's all I got, bud. Thanks, everyone, for their support. All our fans, super fans. John Burke called me a couple times. What a great guy. And hang in there. And we'll talk to you next week.